Welcome to the Lucky Let Court Podcast, a Tennis Now production sponsored by Tennis Express and a proud member of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. I'm your host, Chris Otto. Thrilled to be with you on Monday, May 16th, as Roland Garros kicks off qualifying already underway in Paris. We'll get the draws on Thursday, main draw Sunday. So much to look forward to with that. We've also got a lot to look forward to on the program. Michael Moe is going to join us, the world number 179, who won the USTA's Roland Garros Wildcard Challenge, will be playing in the main draw in Paris, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about where his career is at now. The 24-year-old is a former world number 96 and a number 2-ranked junior, used to rack up wins against guys like Andre Rublev, Stefanos Tsitsipas, Hubert Erkacz. So lots of potential in Michael Moe's game, and he's starting to put it together. He talks to us about how he's overcome injuries of late and how he's finally getting some momentum. New relationship with a coach, Agi Smarczyk, has sparked him. And also, he watched Michael Jordan's The Last Dance, and that gave him some inspiration as well. Of course, Michael Moe is named after Michael Jordan. We also talk a little bit about his family, which is very interesting upbringing. His father is Nigerian, was a former ATP player. His mother from Ireland. Michael actually grew up for 13 years in Saudi Arabia. So a very interesting interview with a very nice young player who's 24 years of age and has a lot of potential. Guys are watching the American men do so well in the last year or so. Keep an eye on Michael Moe. Keep your ears on this interview. It's coming up next, and I will see you guys on the other side. Michael Moe, big pleasure to speak with you today. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Yeah, I'm just getting ready. I'm leaving tomorrow for the Europe trip, going to Lyon first, and then obviously after Lyon, playing the French Open. So yeah, I'm excited for getting my road trip started tomorrow.
Very cool. Yeah, very, very exciting turn of events for you, of course, locking up the USTA's wild card for Roland Garros. You get direct entrance to the main draw at a tournament. I think you've only done main draw once, and I don't think that was really a fun year, if I'm not mistaken. It was 2020, am I correct?
Yeah, no, you're correct. That was the only time I qualified that year. And basically, you know, there was no fans. So like you said, it wasn't the best of years to play, or wasn't the greatest French Open experience just because of that. And then along with that, it was late in the year. So when I played my match, I think I played like first on, and it was super cold. Just wasn't ideal conditions, I guess.
Yeah, that was kind of a miserable experience early in that tournament. I remember it well. But you've got some experience playing in Paris. I think semis of the boys singles back in the day when you were a top-ranked junior. So do you have some special connection with Paris and playing on the red clay out there?
Honestly, yeah, I do think that specific clay court really suits me. I think it plays a little bit faster, you know, kind of similar to how the green clay courts, like the hard true clay courts, play out in the States, just a little bit quicker than, you know, some of the slower European clay courts. And I definitely think that suits my game. And I feel like that's why I've been pretty comfortable playing on those courts. And also, you know, they're probably as good as clay courts can get, super smooth and, you know, no bad bounces and whatnot. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to being out there again.
Yeah, definitely. So can you talk to me a little bit about where you're at in terms of your game? It's obviously obviously coming together pretty nicely for you with the Challenger final in Tallahassee, the quarterfinal run in Houston, which was a little bit interesting. And but overall, you must be feeling pretty good about where you're at.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, last year and some of the years before were tough years just because I was dealing with a lot of injuries. And I was never able to get like a full consistent schedule where I was playing all year round healthy. You know, I'd always like miss 4 months here or 3 months there. So now I feel like my body's finally at a place where I'm able to play week in and week out. And I'm liking how my game is, you know, forming because of that. I'm able to just get consistent reps of playing matches. And I really think, this year is going to be a good year for me just because of that.
How have you managed, Michael, to get healthy? I know you've had some issues, a little bit elbow here and there, and also a lot with the shoulder. What does it take for you to get your body right and to get into a place that you're in now?
You know, honestly, definitely a lot of just like detailed work, you know, detailed work on, you know, some areas that have been more of a problem in terms of my injury history, you know, try to hone in on those, try to make sure that, you know, they don't re-arise, you know, by doing the discipline work. And then overall, just kind of changing the way I train on a day-to-day basis, just a little bit, just tweaking it. And I've found some success this year that will I'll definitely repeat for years to come.
Oh, that's very cool. It's the evolution of Michael Moe. It takes a lot to get things on track, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does. I mean, people, I guess, sometimes forget that the tennis season is so long. You know, you're playing for 10 and a half months, almost 11 months out of the year. So, you know, it's tough to find pockets for recovery and to get your game better and all of that. And then at the same time, like even when you're playing, you still have to maintain, you know, like I said, if I have a shoulder injury, I have to maintain my shoulder continuously. Otherwise, you know, it might turn into a problem again. So you just have to be very disciplined for basically the whole year.
Mm. And Michael, when your game is clicking, I've heard you talk in the past a little bit about wanting to be more aggressive. Like that's a constant thing that you're working on in your own game. But when you're clicking and when things are going right, what is vintage Michael Moe tennis like?
I feel like when I'm at my best, I'm really able to like squeeze the options for my opponent in terms of he doesn't know whether, you know, if he's being too aggressive, you know, he might be missing quite a few balls here and there because, you know, I'm like almost like narrowing the court on him based on the way I move. And then at the same time, if he decides to hang back and, you know, start leaving balls short, you know, I'm going to make him pay for that. And I feel like this year I'm starting to mold into that right balance of, you know, whenever I do get the looks and whenever a guy is content, I'm making him pay. And then if he's trying to force shots, that's not going to also work because, you know, I'm pretty good at covering the lengths of the court.
Yeah. It's the wheels and the fitness have always been your calling card. Wouldn't you say that's true?
Definitely, yeah. Definitely.
I wonder if you take me back several years ago when you were a junior and a top junior, you've got wins over so many players that are currently, you know, big names, Rublevs and Tsitsipas of the world. You know, you had a rivalry with Riley Opelka that you had got the better of him quite a bit. What in particular for you is difficult about that transition going from a top junior with a lot of expectations into the pro game? Was it the injuries and those kind of things and just maturing? Are those the things that are the most difficult, or is there something about the pro game that's tricky?
I would say, to be honest, the majority would definitely be just the lack of continuity due to the injuries.
Yes.
Not necessarily just like the injuries itself, it making me worse or something like that, or it making me less of an athlete, just the time spent away, especially the timing of some of the months that I had to step away. You know, like I crack into the top 100, and then shortly right after that, you know, I'm out for 5 months, and then I have to kind of, you know, do the whole challenger thing again. But then, you know, in terms of tennis and whatnot, I think there's definitely a decent part of it that has to do with that. I would say it just requires, you know, like if you look at anybody that's made a big leap fast, you know, they all have major weapons, and they're really they're imposing their will on their opponents, you know, whether it be, you know, Alcaraz now with, you know, a huge forehand and, you know, he's basically trying to hit a winner on almost every point. That puts a lot of fear into guys that are older than him that, you know, are probably pretty tight playing him. And then all of a sudden he's coming in with that much aggression. You know, I think that's why he's risen so fast. And yeah, so I definitely feel like to be successful in men's tennis, you need some of that.
Yeah, for sure. And do you feel sometimes a little bit frustrated that you haven't broken through? And I wonder, do you personally look at something that happened, like, let's say, Aslan Karatsev of Russia, who really was quiet for many years, although he was a top talent and many people knew about him, didn't have that breakthrough, and all of a sudden it came, and he's rocking and rolling. And maybe a guy like Tennis Sandgren, too, a guy who really paid his dues and was able to break through quite impressively and reach quarterfinals at two slams now. I mean, do these kind of guys give you inspiration?
Definitely. I mean, they show me that, you know, no matter, like, how long you might be playing challengers or whatever, that doesn't mean that you're necessarily, like, a challenger player. You just haven't had the right, you know, it just hasn't clicked yet, like, in terms of you making that breakthrough. And I feel, like I said, if I'm able to consistently be healthy and just give myself opportunities week in and week out, I feel like my game, you know, belongs on the ATP tour. So I think if I'm able to just keep working hard, keep staying healthy, I really think that I'll be surprised if I'm not there.
Yeah. So, Michael, we got about 5 minutes left, and I wonder if something I'm really curious about is I'd like to know more about your upbringing and also your dad, who sounds like a really interesting guy, was a former ATP pro himself that played for Nigeria, which is kind of interesting. And you grew up, and for many years, I think until you were 13, lived in Saudi Arabia. So can you just take me back a little bit through your upbringing and tell me what that was like, kind of being a world traveler at such a young age?
Yeah. Yeah, I got a pretty diverse background for sure. My dad, like you said, Nigerian, played Davis Cup and everything, played the Olympics for Nigeria.
Yeah.
Was almost top 100, like career high, like 105 or something like that. And, you know, coming from where he grew up in, that was pretty astonishing. You know, he didn't necessarily have the resources to be a top tennis player, but he still did it. And then my mom, you know, being from Ireland, literally like country land, country city in Ireland, and they just happened to meet in Saudi Arabia actually through tennis.
Wow.
And I was born there because they stayed there for work and whatnot. And I actually lived there until I was 13 years old, and then I moved straight to Bradenton to train at IMG Academy.
Nice.
So yeah, it's definitely been, you know, a cultural, like, I feel like in terms of me traveling for tournaments and all of that, I've almost been to every continent before I was a professional tennis player. So nothing was new. I was always used to traveling, especially internationally. So I feel like that's something that's kind of helped me along this journey. I feel like sometimes Americans or Europeans, when they go to the opposite continent, you know, they kind of feel out of place, and sometimes it affects their tennis until they get used to it. So I feel like that's something that I have never struggled with, and I think that's because of my diverse background and whatnot.
And can you tell me more about your dad, and is he still actively involved in your tennis? How does he help you? How do you guys work together these days?
Yeah, he actually, he's been with me down at IMG for this whole entire week.
Oh,
we've
cool.
been training. And he's not going with me to Paris, but he's still, like, my overall, like, mentor, I would say. You know, anytime he watches all my matches, we usually talk after all my matches. And, you know, just to get that, like, insight from him is, you know, very beneficial to me, because, you know, he's obviously been through it, and, you know, he obviously cares, and a lot of the insight he gives me is very beneficial.
And so who will you travel with when you go to Lyon and then on to Paris to play Roland Garros?
I'm actually going to be traveling with a guy that I've been traveling with this whole year. His name is Augie Samardzic.
Yes.
And basically, he is a little bit older than me, I think he was born in 94. So, and, you know, we've known each other for a very, very long time. And he's been coaching out of Miami for the past couple of years. And I just felt like, you know, he was a good guy for me because I was kind of in a little bit of a rut. And I thought, you know, he would come in and really just motivate me. You know, he has a very good way with his words. And he just comes with a lot of passion, a lot of energy. And I feel like he's definitely sparked something in me. So that's why I'm going to be traveling with the French. And I look forward to the partnership.
Excellent. And you guys been working together at IMG as well. So when your dad's around, Augie's also been with you.
Correct. Yeah.
And what has it been like to be at IMG? I mean, I know you got a relationship with Sebi Korda. I know you probably hit with him a lot. Shapovalov's down there, and lots of great players. It must be really cool for you to be able to rep with some of, you know, the top players ranking-wise on tour right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's good in terms of, you know, the atmosphere of everything. It's a very competitive atmosphere. I'm able to, you know, hit with Sebi a lot. You know, Shapo when he's there, it's good, you know, just because obviously my goal is to be playing with these guys week in and week out. So it's definitely a good place to train because you're just, it feels like you're on the same tour as them when you're training with them.
Is there anything in particular you like about the way Sebi trains or plays? What do you think makes him such an impressive talent?
I would say, you know, he just has a very natural ability of, you know, making contact with a tennis ball. Mm. You know, it just really comes easy to him. You know, he sees the game very, with like a lot of clarity, I feel. He just plays very smooth and effortless. I think Peter's been a great guy in his corner. You know, I don't think you can get too much better in terms of like, mentorship and coaching along the years. You know, he's very detailed, and you know, you can see it in Sebi's game. Everything is like, technically everything is almost flawless.
Yeah. And my last question for you, Michael, will be a little bit off topic, but I know you're named after Michael Jordan, which is pretty awesome. And I know you spent a lot of the pandemic binge watching The Last Dance, so I wanted to get your thoughts on that specifically, like, really, when you watch that series, what's a professional athlete looking at? How do you see something like that? What do you take away from kind of relearning Michael Jordan's history, and how does it affect you?
Yeah, I mean, that was super inspiring. You know, just like you said, as a fellow athlete, to see his mentality, and, you know, like, I feel there's a lot of great athletes, and, you know, there's a lot of great basketball players, tennis players, but, you know, it's really like the mentality that sets each one of them apart from being, you know, greater good. Yeah. And you definitely see that in Michael, you know, and it was just inspiring because, like, that's something that, you know, it can be a switch almost. You know, you can definitely bring that spark within. And once you do, I feel like you're really going to reach your full potential. And, you know, Michael and the show was a great example of all of that. So, like you said, I was named after him, always look up to him, and that was an amazing documentary.
Is there something specifically about his story that you learned that you didn't know that hit you?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know, you know, that he was basically, you know, coming into the whole thing. You know, obviously he was good, but he wasn't hyped like a LeBron. And, you know, he kind of had that chip on his shoulder. Obviously that shot in the NCAA finals, that definitely gave him a lot of confidence, but overall he didn't come in like some of these guys come in, and, you know, he proved himself to be the best. So that's something special. So I didn't know that he was that overlooked in a sense.
Yeah, that's a good part of the story. And who would you say, if you look out on tour, you think there's an MJ of tennis? Is there a Michael Jordan of tennis? And if so, who would it be?
That's a good question. I always said the greatest of all time was, in my opinion, like when he's playing the best, was Djokovic. That's what I always said, just in terms of tennis. But who would have it? Who would have a Jordan type mentality?
Yeah,
I would probably have to pick. I would probably have to pick Fed. You know, just because both of them are like uber confident and super competitive at the same time. Obviously, Fed doesn't have like the trash talking aspect of things, but I think tennis in general, you're pretty limited when it comes to trash talking. It's not the same as basketball.
Yeah, I'll say.
So I would pick Federer, especially because he's a little bit older now. He was kind of like that first guy, like all those RF shoes and whatnot. They were selling a lot more than, you know, Djokovic's shoes or Nadal's shoes. So that kind of represents like Jordan. You know, he was selling the most shoes at any b-ball player maybe ever. So.
Yep.
I'll probably say Roger.
Yeah.
Both of them are icons on and off the court.
Yep. Yeah. I think I'd agree with you there. And they've got that Nike connection And Michael, last question. Do you think what you talked about with MJ's mentality and some of the other things you mentioned, do you think you can parallel that to yourself? And does that give you inspiration? And something that like watching that series and kind of getting closer with it is actually an ad for you personally?
Yeah, 100%. Like, that's why it's kind of exciting and inspiring watching a documentary like that, because you can see that, you know, that mental switch. It, you know, it sounds tough and it sounds, you know, like it's years and years of a certain type of mindset. But once you do make that switch, it can be night and day. And I feel like I'm starting to make that switch. I already feel it.
Yeah.
I feel like, I'm getting more passionate about the game, and I think that's the key, you know, ultimately. You know, I think somebody who's extremely passionate about what they do day in and day out is just going to show in their work and results.
Awesome. Well said. Michael, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Congrats on the success and being in the main draw at Roland Garros. I'll be out in Paris, and I'll be looking forward to watching you play, and good luck out there.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Good
cool.
talking to you.
Okay.
I'll see you over there.
Excellent. Thanks for your time. This edition of the Lucky Let Cord podcast is a wrap. Extra special thanks to Michael Moe for joining us, and good luck out at Roland Garros. Michael, hopefully you'll do some damage in the main draw. Don't forget, the draw takes place on Thursday. Main draw at Roland Garros will begin on Sunday. You can keep tuned to all the action at www.tennisnow.com. You can also find us on social media at facebook.com/tennisnow, at Twitter, which is @tennis_now. And of course, you can find us on Apple Podcasts. We'd love it if you rate, review, subscribe to the podcast. You can just open your Apple Podcasts app, type in Lucky Let Cord Podcast, and voila, you can find us. Your input means a lot to us. It keeps us going. It fires us up. So thanks a lot for listening. Thanks again to Michael Moe. You guys enjoy Roland Garros. We will talk to you soon.